You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Recorded during the Bears-Seahawks Monday Night Football game, it's time to... Wait, wrong show. Hold on. I got this. Welcome to the midside, where no matter how bad this gets, I won't quit and retire halfway through. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and I'm flying solo today because I have been abandoned by my co-host. Daniel is off somewhere with his fancy job and his new kid and his wife living the American dream as a multiracial family who social justice warriors probably still hate for some reason. And William is off in Orlando at the Magic Kingdom. That's right. The guy who wants to be in California is where the guy in California wants to be. Isn't this country wonderful? And I have to be honest with you all for a second here to start. Not like I'm ever not honest, but you get the point I'm making. It's a rhetorical flourish. Stay with me here, people. It's going to be a long one. You can already hear River the Podcat in the background there putting her two cents in. Thankfully, Christine is not here tonight, so she won't be yelling in the background, although I know some of you asked for her in Discord, but she promptly laughed that off. But I have to be honest with you. I slacked off on recording yesterday. I slacked off on recording yesterday because I didn't want to do this alone. I got some negative reviews the last time I did this alone, and on a deeper level, my greatest fear is being alone. And I don't mean that in some second-handed way where I need other people for validation and to make my life worthwhile. I mean that in the way of there is a legitimate psychological value to having your values and ideals and energy and emotion and passions reflected back at you. And the world is better, life is better, when you have people that you can trade with and trade well with. And I think this show, at its ideal, in its ideal state, is that kind of a show. When we have Daniel and William and myself, and we're all feeding off of each other and using each other's energy and using each other's passion for witnessing the farce to escalate and have that witnessing go over the top and even more. And I actually find it harder to go over the top with no one else to play off of. I mean, right now I can talk and rant, and this will be a vintage Justin rant. I've got a few good topics that Midsiders out there, mainly in Discord, provided to me. And there's going to be some good content, but it's really hard for me without someone to play off of, without people to play off of, and people that bolster me, because that's just naturally how my mind works in that sort of escalation way, where someone says something, then I go, oh, that's the next thing to say. When I'm only escalating off of myself, it sort of feels like screaming into the abyss. I mean, that's sort of what social media is, and that's why, to a certain extent, I've decided recently that I'm really, really only going to use Facebook and Twitter from now on for promoting the show, and I'm pretty much done with Instagram. I'm trying to figure out, like, what one final good Instagram post would be, but I don't see a need to really use social media anymore. Social media is a very feminine space. And see, this would be a great place for someone to push back on me. I know what they'd fucking say. How dare you? What are you fucking gendering a space for? Space isn't gendered. Are you a social justice warrior? Blah, blah, blah. No, it's the tool brings out the user, right? The tool reflects the user. So you're right. It's inherently, I'm not claiming that it's inherently a feminine space, but the way it is used in our culture right now, it is very much about socially preening and socially posturing, socially posing, being like, look at how awesome my life is. Look at how great my life is. I mean, the greatest example I could think of Instagram and why I fucking hate it, besides getting into the black hole, getting sucked into the black hole of fitness Instagram. Fitness Instagram is a fucking worse. It's terrible. It's like everyone acts like they've got like an 8-pack and they always try to give like these inspirational quotes like, do your best every day and you can look like me. Now sign up for my online coaching. Everyone is an online coach nowadays. Everyone is an online fitness coach. It's like, how about you get a real fucking skill? How about you get a real skill? Why don't you go to a gym and meet real people and motivate them rather than trying to steal their money online? But besides that, besides fitness Instagram, the greatest example I can think of is my brother's wife. Now, if she listens to this podcast, I'm fucked. I've just caused even more drama in my family. But you know what? Fuck it. My family already hates me. So whatever. Her Instagram, I don't know how anyone can post these stories that she posts. I don't know how anyone can be so unself-aware. And the greatest example of this, the perfect example of this is one day she ran out of gas and she posted it on her story. If I fucking ran out of gas, I would be so fucking ashamed of the fact that I was so poor at planning that I couldn't fucking get to the gas station in time. That's like you have to take a shit and you're so poor at planning that you end up shitting your pants in the middle of the fucking hallway and just doing an Instagram story like, oh, I shit my pants. Isn't that funny? No, it's not fucking funny. A fucking 3-year-old is potty trained and won't shit his pants. And you're fucking out there acting like it's funny? So she's got it on there, on her Instagram story about, oh, isn't it funny? I ran out of gas. And she even has the audacity to talk about my brother and show him in the background and be like, I think he's really mad at me. I think he's really mad that I ran out of gas and he had to come and bail me out. Maybe he's mad because he's married to a fucking idiot. And he's like, Jesus fucking Christ, this is what I said till death do us part. Can we just bring the death on at this point? Like, this is like a living fucking death. That would be a living fucking death to me. If my girlfriend called me, if my wife called me and was like, I ran out of gas, could you fucking get it? First of all, fucking call AAA. Am I AAA? No, I'm JML. I'm not fucking AAA. Second of all, are you fucking retarded? Like, that's literally what I would be like. You're fucking retarded. It would be really hard for me not to just hang up with them and never talk to them ever again. And then if I saw she posted about it on Instagram and then she was like, oh, I think my husband's really mad at me. And then I swear to fucking God to you, this is what she literally said. She literally goes, oopsie, oopsie, oopsie. Are you a fucking 3-year-old? Are you fucking 3-year-old and you pooped outside the potty? Oopsie. This is why I can't stand social media. This is why I don't see anything of value on it. Yeah, I can follow bands on it and I can, you know, see some highlights from the NFL and from the Red Sox. How about that? I've been following the Red Sox with their impressive over 100-win season going on right now. I probably wouldn't have done that otherwise. So there's legitimate uses for it, which maybe this is wrong of me engendering again, but I see that as more of a male use. It's sort of like that is my new reading the newspaper every day. I'll get up and I'll look on Twitter and Instagram and see what the updates are. But beyond that, anytime I try to interact with random people, I just get fucking like bitchiness back. It's just fucking like, you're an idiot. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Blah, blah, blah. It's just, why deal with that? Why be in that space? So social media has the word social and you would think it'd be about conversation, but I'm really just going to use it to broadcast from now on. And that's, you know, that's a greater point in our society about socializing. And that actually goes to one of the topics that one of the Midsiders asked me to talk about in Discord when I asked for topics to talk about. And I think it was Midsider JP. He asked me to talk about pickup artists. That's what he just said. He just said pickup artists. And if for anyone who's unaware, there's this whole subculture of men who teach other men how to pick up women. That's why they call themselves pickup artists. Now, we can even look at the term up there, right? And the fact that you think there's an art to picking up people, that, you know, that becomes a whole different thing where it's no longer the traitor principle. And I'll get there in a second where, you know, it's about the artistry of the pickup, right? How well you're doing it. Well, that becomes more about proving yourself to the other men. That becomes a dick measuring contest more than it becomes actually trying to genuinely connect with someone of the opposite gender. Again, we don't know how to socialize, right? But there's more to it than that. If we put that aside, and that's definitely the critique that I'll get to in a second. This is actually a really good topic to bring up right now, because this guy Roosh, who, if you've heard of him before, he does this website called Return of the Kings or Return of the King. Hold on, let me see if I can find this real quick. Roosh, I'm Googling his name right now. See, this is where it's not entertaining if you're by yourself. If you've got other people, you can just be like, hey, you know, you talk for a little bit while I Google this. Yeah, Return of the King. I'm sure it's probably a Lord of the Rings reference or whatever. But he just released a book called Game. And this is his follow-up to all of his other books about pickup artistry. Except he's applying all of the things to Game to even beyond picking up women. It's to having a sustainable lifestyle, having a sustainable relationship. And that's what's most interesting to me about all of this. Because Roosh has got a niche beyond other pickup artists. Because other pickup artists were big like 10 years ago, 12 years ago when I was in grad school. And I'll get to that. They were big then, and he's still now, because he's taking the forefront on defending masculinity in our social justice culture that is fucking attacking the shit out of masculinity. And that, to me, is the real value of the whole pickup artist thing. If you're seeing it to be an artist and you're preening for other men, again, you're trying to be feminine. You're trying to be masculine by being feminine. That doesn't really make any fucking sense. It's like you're just doing exactly what you're trying to get away from. But if you're going to it because you're trying to learn something, well, then there's some value there. And maybe I'm just projecting and defending myself, because back in the day, which is in Clemson, by the way, I got into the pickup artist stuff. And I don't mean I was ever a pickup artist. I don't mean I ever like went out there and was like sarging women, as they say. Sarging is when you go out at night and you're like, oh, I'm going to go sarge at the bar scene. No, I didn't do that. First of all, there's like 16,000 people at Clemson. You do that like three nights. Everyone fucking knows who you are, because it's all the same people who go to the bars anyway in Clemson. So you fucking just made yourself look like an ass to everyone. Although, I do remember one time at Clemson, there's this one opener pickup artist teach, and it's, do you floss before or after you brush? Which I think is the dumbest fucking opener ever, because it's like, where do you go from a fucking conversation there? And I was telling people how dumb that opener was, and this guy Brent, huge fucking drunk, he was self-medicating with alcohol and marijuana, and when he went off of that, he had a manic episode. So this fucking tells you his character. He took that line and he said it to two girls, and he just had like a fucking half an hour long conversation. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, how do you do that? Because like, I wouldn't even want to have that conversation. But the lesson there is, it's just about starting a conversation. It doesn't matter where you start. If you have good conversational skills and good self-esteem, you can transition from anything. It's just pick a fucking opener and go with it. And those are the kind of principles that I learned. So back when I was in Clemson, at Clemson, VH1 came out with the Pickup Artist Show. That was a show starring Mystery, and it was like any other reality show. This was the boom of reality television, where they picked like 10 to 12 guys, I don't remember how many, who were similar to me. You know, never had sex, hadn't kissed many women, hadn't been on many dates. And it was like, we're going to train you, and every week eliminate one of you. And at the end, we're going to have, who's the next protege? Who is our next pickup artist protege? Some guy named Cosmo won. That's the extent of my fucking useless knowledge. I can tell you who won season one of the Pickup Artist on VH1. Why would I ever need to fucking know that? That's probably not even a Jeopardy question at this point. That's like a question that a girl asks you on a first date, and if you answer it, she just fucking gets up and walk away. I get up and walk away if you've ever run out of gas on the side of the road. She gets up and walks away if I know who fucking Cosmo was. So Cosmo won the first season of The Pickup Artist, and I then went on to read The Mystery Method, which is the book that Mystery wrote that got him famous. It's his how-to of how to pick up women. This is an entirely pragmatic book. Completely pragmatic. There are no principles in it. I mean, there are sort of principles in it there, but they're short-term pragmatic principles. And some of them are very worthwhile. Some of them, like the one I found the most useful. Actually, there's a couple I found the most useful. There's the body language aspect of it, where all Mystery did was look at guys he calls alphas and mimic them and said, you know, they control the frame by how they hold their body language, which is, it's fucking true. How you hold your body fucking matters. Now, this is the problem where I say they have no principles. There's no philosophy behind it. It's about preening for other men. He's only imitating. He's only mimicking. He's saying, oh, if I mimic this, the girl will like me. Well, yeah, maybe for a little bit, but then she'll see underneath you have a shallow, empty shell, and it's a, you're a husk of a person, and you'll see that come up in 1 second. But, you know, that's good advice, you know? How are you sitting? Are you mirroring other people's language? You know, things like that, pay attention to. You catch yourself. I still do it. I still catch myself. I still watch myself. People tell me I carry myself very well now. Part of that is because I read The Mystery Method. Because nobody ever fucking taught me this. My dad didn't teach me these things. My dad didn't teach me how to talk to women. So I had to resort to these things. That's the place we're at in our society, where men have to turn to these things. We have to create these societies. Roosh has to be the one leading men, because masculinity is so fucking attacked that this is what we're at. That men don't get the advice. They don't get the lessons from their father. We have to get it from other random men who are just fucking trial and error shit. I mean, it's like an RPG. Mystery is like an RPG person. Like, if you look, go Google Mystery, right? Or his name is Eric Von Markovic. I have it up right here. Apparently, I searched this guy, Neil Strauss, who I'm going to talk about in a second. I'm transitioning into him. And the three people it has are Eric Von Markovic, Ross Jeffries, and Dave Navarro. I don't know how Dave Navarro got into this, and then Marilyn Manson. I don't know how Dave and Tommy Lee, I guess these are people they wish they were, but it's just so, it's funny. It's like random dude named Mystery, Ross Jeffries, I should probably know who that is, then the Dave Navarro. I don't know what that says about Dave Navarro, but so Mystery teaches these things. It's worthwhile. Body language, I forget what the other thing I was going to say was. There were two things. Oh, no. Yeah. So body language is really important, right? Sometimes I'll be in a room and, like, you can tell sometimes who's sort of the dominant person in the room is if other people are mimicking their body language. Or if you're talking to someone and they mimic your body language, they're especially engaged with you. So I try to make sure, and that happens to me sometimes, I try to make sure that I am not mimicking other people's body language. Because even if they are engaged, I don't want to give them a sense of dominance. Just because I want to be seen as an equal, I don't want to be seen as like an inferior. Although sometimes it is worthwhile to do it. I mean, if you're in there and you're with the fucking president of your company, maybe you just relax and just act naturally, because there is a natural power imbalance there. So that's fine. But it's something to be aware of. Because if you're talking and then the president mimics your body language, you're like, okay, I'm in, I'm good, I can be comfortable around this person because he trusts me and he sees me as an equal. He is comfortable enough around me to just listen to what I say and take what I say seriously. So body language is important. It's important when talking to women too. You can see women, you learn a lot more from looking at their body language than you do other guys. 100%. They communicate so much unintentionally with their body language. And that's a lot of what the Mystery Method is about. Likewise, another thing the Mystery Method taught me that's a huge thing that I still use to this day is, it's called escalating Kino. And it's the basic idea is, the basic principle is, if you want a woman to like you touching her, she has to get used to it. So you have to start with little touches. Make up little excuses to touch her, and then she will get used to it. I mean, if you want to have more intimate touching, you have to have non-intimate touching first, right? It's a natural escalation. Fucking obvious as shit, right? Well, someone who doesn't know shit like me, who doesn't learn that naturally in high school, you think it's this big fucking jump, right? That's what I always thought. I was like, oh man, how do you go from 0 to 60? Because that's how the media portrays it. Turn on fucking MTV reality shows. Like, I watch like Are You the One, this fucking dumbest shit, trashy reality show. And that's what they show it like. They show it like they meet, they kiss, then they go to the boom boom room and fuck. It's like, where's the non-intimate touching? We don't romanticize that in our culture. We don't act like that. In our culture of naturalism, we ironically don't show that. We still only show the intimate touching, and that's very confusing if you don't know. But even on a friendship level again with other guys, like a pat on the back can go a long way. Bumping fists. I bump fists with so many guys now, and that goes a long way because it's a way of establishing a trustworthy connection there. If you're going to fist bump someone, you're not going to hurt them. There's a trust level there. So things like that are worthwhile. But again, those are short-term things, and they're worthwhile skills, and they're great, and I'm glad somebody figured them out and is teaching them. I think that's valuable, and I don't understand why we don't teach these kind of skills to everyone, really. I mean, either gender can know about them, because, guys, we're going to sit here, and we're going to say there's all this strategy shit, and this is the number one thing, right? Women will be like, oh, pickup artists are so fucking sketchy. Why do they have to use all this strategy when talking to girls? Why can't they just be themselves? Fuck you. All right, women, if you're going to sit there and say that, like, you don't use strategy when talking to guys, this fucking girl at my work comes up to me and she's like, oh, you went to Ithaca College? My ex-boyfriend went to Ithaca College. And then she, like, proceeded to tell me all the ways I was similar to her ex-boyfriend. And then she fucking fixated on her ex-boyfriend for the next 10 minutes. What do you think she's fucking communicating with that, with that statement? What do you think she's doing? You think that's not strategy? You think that's not, hey, you know, I was with this guy for 6 fucking years and now I'm not with him anymore and I'm really sad and lonely and you remind me of him. Come on. You think that's not strategy? You think that's not a purpose? You think that's not intentional? So for guys to be demonized for having strategy, it's again, the demonization of masculinity, but it becomes an issue when it's hollow and it's empty. And that's why the Roosh book is so interesting, because this guy, Neil Strauss, who either, I don't remember 100% because I read The Game way back when I was in grad school, but The Game by Neil Strauss is this really good book, right? The Mystery Method, I wouldn't really suggest reading it, but the Game, even if you're not a pickup artist, even if you're not interested in becoming a pickup artist, even if you're not a guy, even if you're married, I would suggest reading this book because this is a very entertaining book. The second I read it, I was like, this would make an amazing movie. It's just a great movie about this culture, this subculture, and about one man's journey through it. And Neil Strauss lives with mystery, and he either is mystery's protege or he's his trainer or something like that. He claims to meet Britney Spears at some point, and it's his whole journey through. He gains all of this self-worth and everything through pickup artistry and through learning it, the Vesuvian arts, I think they call it, or something like that. But then years later, he wrote an even better book called The Rule, or The Truth, sorry. 2015, he wrote it. It's called The Truth, an uncomfortable book about relationships. And this guy who's been a pickup artist for all these years found the woman he wants to be with, but he can't be with her because he's got all these issues. And she tells him he's a sex addict and he goes into therapy. So he takes this deep dive. He commits himself to sex rehab, sex therapy rehab. And then he goes, you know what? I don't want to be in a committed relationship. And he explores all of the different options of non-traditional relationships. And he comes out the other side of it a better person because he's honest. And he looks into the psychology of it, and he learns about things like his enmeshment with his mother and how that fucked up his relationship with women, which I think is very, very interesting nowadays with the way I was just talking about things being very feminine and, you know, fathers being very withdrawn. I think our culture in general is very enmeshed with women. That's a whole other discussion for a whole other episode, perhaps. But this book, The Truth, an uncomfortable book about relationships, this is where I think the true value of the pickup artist culture comes from. If you can combine learning these practical skills with this inner development of therapy that Strauss went on, this journey he went on, I think there's a lot of value in it. Because you're not just doing these things to preen for other men or to raise your count to prove you can dominate, right? That's the Francisco de Anconia sex speech. If you've read Atlas Shrugged, a lot of pickup artists fall into the trap of chasing women to gain self-esteem. No, sex is about relationships. Romance are about sharing values, sharing self-esteem, expressing your passion It's what I said at the top. Sharing, reflecting back, and having that, I want to say echo chamber, but that's not what I mean, where things reverberate and they grow on each other and it gets louder and louder, right? That's what a relationship is about. You should help each other get louder and better in that way because you're sharing and reflecting each other's values and passions back at each other. Not just try to conquer women to prove that you have self-esteem. Women do it too. Women do it too. That's not unique to any gender. But Strauss, he goes into that. And that book, read both of them. If you've got time and you're looking for something to read, read The Game, then follow up with it and read The Truth, an uncomfortable book about relationships. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to see the value of it there. Because it's like Daniel says all the time, if everyone would just go to therapy once a year, we'd all be doing so much better. Why do you not have a mental health checkup? And you can actually see that in the first book, in The Game, where Mystery has like a mental breakdown and Strauss talks about how bad mentally Mystery is. I think that Strauss was aware of the issues in the first book. He just wasn't ready to face them. And I think that, and I'm speaking from a personal experience here, when you know there's something wrong, you know there's something wrong. I mean, physically, you know there's something wrong, right? If your knee's fucked up and you're limping around all day, you're not just like, oh, my knee's fine. It's normal. This is how people walk. I'm fine. No, you fucking know there's something wrong. You just don't want to go to the doctor because you're a douche. And it's the same thing with mental health. And I think Strauss knew that, and it was inevitable he would get to that point. And him going on that journey, I think, is a great learning lesson for our culture as a whole, but men in specific, in as far as the value of pickup artistry and the value of that community and what men need for themselves, from their fathers, from their mothers, and from each other. And it's really sad nowadays that we study femininity in such a positive way and masculinity in such a negative way, because I could see an entire college course developed around these books. And this is why I'm interested in Roosh's book and would like to read it, because I think maybe his could be added in the same thing, in that same sort of canon, if you will. And on the very least, this would make a great couple movies or maybe a Netflix series. Why the fuck is Netflix not making this movie? We gotta make more Asian movies? Don't get me wrong. I'll take another 8 movies with Lana Condor and it hooking up with the white jock. I'm fine with that. That's cool. That's in my wheelhouse, Netflix. Give me more of those movies. But I'd like to see these movies as well, because we need more of that. You know, I say that over and over again. We need more romanticism. We need more movies that are about improving yourself, valuing yourself, making yourself into a better person. That's where ideally pickup artistry could lead you. You know, they talk about inner game. They also talk about going to the gym. And going to the gym is sort of the next thing I want to talk about on this episode, because I found this article. Oh my God. If you follow me on Twitter, if you talk to me about working out, follow The Midside on Twitter, at The Midside, you know that I've shared this article, I've talked about it. It's ridiculous. So the article is by Vice, of course, and it's working out as a minefield when you're non-binary. You can already see where this is going when you're non-fucking binary, right? The whole two genders thing. We've talked about that ad infinitum. Don't need to go into that. But they tweeted something, Vice, about how we need to learn how to make gyms a safe space for non-binary people, blah, blah, blah. So before we even take a deep dive into this article, there was a great tweet by at Shingo Kaired. So Shingo Kaired. I want to give him props because this is a great tweet. Or her. I don't know. I'm not going to fucking assume his gender, ironically. Maybe he's three-spirited. I don't know. No, he's not. You know how I know he's not? Because he wrote this fucking tweet. Here's how you feel safe in the gym. Put on your headphones, ignore everyone else, do your sets, shut the fuck up. Congrats. Now you are safe. Because here's the thing about gyms. This is 100% true, because here's the thing about gyms. Before I started working out seriously, one of the major things that kept me from doing that was self-consciousness. Now, this, of course, came from my low self-esteem issues, which was why I was reading pickup artist literature and watching The Pickup Artist, right? Probably remnants of this are why I'm still watching stupid shows like Are You the One? But I was worried. I was worried if I went in the gym as a small guy at 5'6", 130, people were going to fucking laugh at me. And they're going to be like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And I was even worried about going in the locker room and like changing and people being like, yo, what's wrong with this guy? But first off, let me tell you about the locker rooms. No one's going to give a shit if you're changing the locker room because there's always that old dude with his balls hanging down to his knees walking around in the locker room. That's the dude everyone's worried about. Nobody's looking at you. They're looking at that old dude being like, really, guy? Really? But come on, when you're 80 years old, do you really give a fuck? I want to be that guy one day. I want to be that guy one day to not care so little that you're just walking around the locker room with your balls just hanging down to your ankles. So no one's going to care for that reason. And the most awkward thing that will probably ever happen to you, at least it happened to me, is gay guys will check you out, like when you're walking in the shower and you're like, this is awkward. This is weird. This isn't a bathhouse. Go to San Francisco. This isn't ancient Rome. Don't want none of that. So that's probably the weirdest thing that will happen ever. That's the worst it'll get. Because honestly, when you're at the gym, you are competing with yourself. It's not about anyone else there. People taller than you will lift less. People smaller than you will lift more. That's true of even me. Sometimes girls will lift more than me because different people have different strengths and have been training for different amounts of times for different reasons. No one has the same context. To go in there and compare is the most futile exercise ever. I don't know why I just said futile like that. Futile. I said futile like I was Brent Spiner in Star Trek First Contact. For years, they were like, resistance is futile. And then he goes in the movie, resistance is futile. And you're like, what the fuck, Brent Spiner? You just want to be different? Fuck you. And then they killed his character off for a dumb reason in a later movie. So guess that was punishment, maybe. Anyway, yeah, it's the dumbest shit in the entire world. If you're going there to compare yourself to other people, you're the one with the problem, not them. So that's the first thing. That's what I want to get out of the way. The gym is a great place for anyone. In fact, if you want help, people will help you. You can pay the people a ridiculous amount who work there, the physical trainer, the personal trainers there, a ridiculous amount, and they'll help you, or other people will help you. They'll be supportive. As long as you are working hard and you're not fucking sitting on one machine for an hour, people will help you. If you're trying to make progress, people will help you, because you can't take care of yourself and work hard like that and not respect other people who do the same thing. It just doesn't work like that. You gain a certain amount of self-esteem by working in that way. It's ironically sort of the same as the pickup artist community. The reason they're so supportive of each other is they're going through the same journey and they understand the hard work and the struggle and the place you're coming from. It's the same thing with people who work out and succeed. They want to help you. The only thing is if, and this fucking happened to me, if you have a problem with hot Cheetos and someone says to you, okay, first step, just stop eating fucking hot Cheetos, and then you start texting about how you're still eating hot Cheetos, you can understand why they wouldn't want to deal with you anymore. It's like, fuck you. Would you fucking run out of gas on the side of the road? Seriously. If you don't want to work out, don't work out. If you do, commit to it. And as long as you do that, no one in the gym gives a shit. That's the thing. That's the first thing that's ridiculous about this. It's so secondhanded. It's so narcissistic. And we're going to see that. These people, this is what they want. This is a list of things they want. I made a list of things they want. They want non-gendered locker rooms and bathrooms, which, you know, that'll fucking go well in our rape culture, right? They're not even internally consistent. Yeah, let's have non-gendered locker rooms where people can go in of both genders. That'll fucking go well. Remember back in the day where, was it Saved by the Bell, the college years, or like any movie or any TV show, they would have like non-gendered college bathrooms, and you'd just be like, how does this happen in reality? That would never happen nowadays. I remember back in the day in college, like I'm so fucking old, I was in my bathroom one time, and this guy's out-of-town girlfriend is in the bathroom like, why the fuck are you in here? I just turned around and walked out. Even back then, I was like, this is a situation I don't want to be in. It was the guy's room, but it's fucking college on like a Saturday night. Everyone's drunk. They're just doing whatever the fuck they want. So can you imagine a non-gendered restroom nowadays? But to be fair, these people want the gyms to spend extra money to have individual stalls for changing. Can you imagine the amount of money that would fucking cost for every gym to have, for all of their members, enough individual stalls for changing? Now, as I just said, people will sit on the fucking machines for half an hour. Can you imagine how long they'd sit in the stalls for changing? You'd have people fucking watching an entire Netflix movie in a stall while you're waiting to change. It's like, hey, dude, I'm over here. I'm trying to get out of here. And you're watching Lana Condor right now. Can you quit jerking off? Actually, that's somebody probably talking to me. That would be me in that case. But so that's the first thing they want. They want to be able to select their pronoun when signing up. Heaven forbid you interact with someone, and when someone says, "See you later, ma'am," you go, "No, I'm sorry, I'd prefer to be called sir." You know, how dare you? How dare you think you can just call someone what you want and you don't have to speak up for yourself? They should know automatically. This is the computer age. We should just have a fucking digital chip in us that tells us the way everyone should interact with us. Just fucking interact with somebody. Somebody calls you something you don't want, politely tell them that they are wrong and you would like them to call you something different. You know why? Because the common thing is man and women. That is the common thing that will always be common. I'm going to build to that. But that will always be common, and you need to fucking accept that. And then they want trainers who are specifically trained for LGBTQC++. How insane is that? They want trainers who are specifically trained for them. So here's a quote from the article. I think I have two quotes. So here's the first one. "In the fitness industry, everything is gendered. Even certain excuses are categorized as for men or for women. It's a huge release to be freed of that burden, even if it's just in this space." I'm literally taking a deep breath. That's why I paused there. I think it's the first time I've paused for the entire time. But do you want to know the reason everything is gendered in a gym? Because training changes based upon your biology. Men have different workouts. Men have different workouts. They even complained about that in the article, I believe. Christine pointed that out to me, my girlfriend. She was like, "Yeah, they pointed out that there are different exercises for both genders." No shit, there are different exercises. First of all, as I said, everyone has their own training regimen, even within the same gender, within the same age. Even if you train the same way, you're not going to end up looking the same because everyone's body's different. No matter what you do, you're not necessarily going to look like Zac Efron, Justin. Give it up. Give it up. Zac Efron and Baywatch is not a standard for you. Give it up. Everyone is going to look differently. That's fine. And it's especially pronounced in the genders. There are certain requirements. First of all, let's take a basic one. Women carry fat differently than men. If you ever look up body fat percentages, women have a higher body fat percentage where they can be toned and athletic, and they have a higher body fat percentage that is necessary body fat than men have. That's just a fact. As a biological fact, that is objective. That is non-oppressive. But this idea they have is that these things are oppressive to them because they don't fit into this binary. Final quote. "The success of everybody has been stellar, and it serves as a shining example of a reality of a large-scale, profitable, non-gendered wellness space." First of all, a wellness space is much fucking different than a gym, okay? A wellness space is called a fucking hospital, all right? Fuck you. You want a wellness space? Go to the hospital. Go to your doctor for a checkup and then say, "Can you put some weights in your fucking room?" That's a wellness space, all right? Or is a wellness space like a spa? A spa where you fucking get a happy ending and you can work out at the same time. Is that a fucking happy ending? Is that a wellness space? Or maybe it's rehab. Dr. Drew's... The new season of Dr. Drew's Celebrity Rehab is going to be called Dr. Drew's Wellness Space. I'm going to pitch that. I'm going to call up the Adam and Dr. Drew show. Couldn't get through without a plug for them. I'm going to call them up and be like, "Hey, have you considered the next season of your show to be called Dr. Drew's Wellness Space?" A fucking wellness space. Fuck you. They can't even just call things normally anymore. But this gym, everybody, is in like West Hollywood. So the one space that's been created for 30 years, 40 years of people immigrating there, emigrating, people going there to create a community where that is specifically viable, they've created that in the niche market and they think it's viable everywhere. They are so disconnected from reality. It's just a huge disconnect from reality. People work out based upon the facts of their biology. If you want to start fucking with your biology, hey, it's your body. Do what you want. I don't give a fuck. But when you start telling the rest of us we have to normalize things, that's where the problem comes in. And that's where the huge problem comes in. You're trying to normalize things that aren't normal. I hate to break it to you. You can be whatever you want. If that's what you want to do, you want to be whatever of these other third spirits or trans M to F or F to M, more power to you. It's America. Do what you want. I'm not going to stop you from doing whatever you want. You can do it. But you will not be normal, just like I am not normal for all the Funko Pops I have in my apartment. I am not normal for my newfound glory tattoo on my bicep. These are not normal things. I do not want them to be normal because I don't give a fuck. They're just not normal. That's normal is what the majority is. Normal is what is most people. That is normal. And a lot of the times in life, you're not going to be normal. And other times you are going to be normal. Hey, guess what? You're normal because you have hair. Everyone has hair. That is normal. You're normal because you have skin. Guess what? That's normal. You have two legs. That's normal. All right? Stop trying to normalize things that aren't normal. And another thing came up about that this week with a similar idea of this not normalizing things. Apparently recently, and I don't know if we talked about this on the show or not before, but the Gerber baby is the new model has Down syndrome because they want to normalize Down syndrome. They want to normalize retardation. It's not normal. It shouldn't be normal, and we shouldn't treat them as if they are normal. It is a disservice to them and their reality and their life experience. You want to talk about living your truth? We don't want them to live their truth if we're treating them as normal. They don't have the same requirements that we have. People who are not normal do not have the same requirements. That doesn't make them bad. That doesn't make them good. It simply is that they don't have the same requirements. And to raise them up as some sort of an ideal or to make them the same as something that is considered the best isn't fair to them, and it isn't fair to the people who are the best, because you're no longer treating people as they are and treating them based upon the requirements of what they are. Someone who has Down syndrome requires extra care. Is their food probably doesn't need extra care. Maybe that's why they're doing it. I don't know. But to treat it the same and normalize it isn't fair to any of us. It isn't fair to any of us. And this leads into the final thing I want to talk about, which is something that one of the Midsiders brought up in the Discord channel. And if you haven't signed up for Discord, you should. We have some good conversations in there. We have some good topics in there. Somebody just said, I actually said in there, I'm recording tonight, everyone. Sorry for the delay. And somebody said, I'm weeks behind anyway, so it's fine by me. I just learned that Daniel's racist against his own baby, which is actually funny that he just shared that in Discord, because Daniel sent a picture of his baby today accidentally doing the okay white power sign on his arm. So he apparently Daniel's baby is even a white supremacist in today's culture. So it's funny that that Midsider said that in the chat. But in the show ideas, I'm scrolling for it. Yeah, this is what somebody wanted me to talk about. An argument I keep hearing that the dangers of rabid SJWs are totally overblown, that they are a tiny fringe with no influence over Main Street leftists, and that people who care to criticize them are just making a mountain out of a molehill. Now, there is something to be said about this. It's a short-term, long-term thing for me. The short-term thing is, yeah, in your own life, don't take them seriously, right? There's a quote from Atlas Shrugged where Dagny wakes up in the gulch and she says, "We never had to take any of it seriously, did we?" No, we don't. We don't have to take it seriously in our own lives. We don't have to take it seriously in our own lives. Just live your life, do what you can, and move on. The danger of SJWism and where it goes beyond is articles like I just talked about, is making the Gerber baby have Down syndrome. It's all the movies we talked about on the show. It's undeniable. Look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is undeniable. It is undeniable. I'm just going to say incorrect words now. It is undeniable, but that they have an influence. And the danger in the long term is the effect on other people. That is the danger. You know what would have to go here eventually. You know I'd have to talk about it. I made some jokes at the top about football, but let's talk about it. You want a real rant? This is one of Midsider Mark's favorite rants I've ever went on. Fucking Deflategate. You want to see fucking SJWism and how it affects the culture? Look at the goddamn fucking NFL, okay? Look at what they tried to do to Tom Brady, all right? Everyone believes the Patriots are still cheaters. I'm at the fucking bar yesterday, 2 days ago when you guys are hearing this, and a fucking Raiders fan gets accused of cheating and he goes, "Don't look at me, look at that guy, he's a cheater," across the bar. That's the thing. It becomes culturally acceptable to say the best people only got there from cheating. That's what happens with SJWism. It's not a fringe. Look, it's not the extreme that makes it. It's not the extreme that makes it. This article about the non-binary gym, that's not going to make it. That's not going to settle into the culture. But what they do is they use this strategy, right? They say the most outlandish things. And then when you go, well, that's fucking crazy. Then they say something a little less outlandish and you go, you know, that's not as bad. And they make it a little bit more acceptable and a little bit more acceptable. And they keep pushing the boundaries until the extreme shit no longer seems extreme. That's how everything's so fucking tilted right now. Okay. Think about what's going on right now. Think about it. The idea of toxic masculinity is now no longer an insane culture. They've been doing this since we were young. I know they've been doing it since we were young. Part of the reason I got into the pickup artist stuff, and I love that this intentionally just came full circle, but it's it. Part of the reason I got into it and I started reading all that shit is I was legitimately afraid to talk to girls in high school and college because, one, I was afraid of getting slapped for merely approaching them, I was afraid of getting slapped. And I was also afraid of, what if they levied an accusation against me? I knew there was nothing I could do. I knew that their word would be taken over mine automatically. So I was afraid. You are putting a high level of trust in a woman as a man. If you approach her, if you have sex with her, if you even go out on a date with her and you are in an intimate one-on-one situation, even if nothing happens, let's just say nothing happens, you're in a one-on-one situation where no one else can see you with a woman, you're putting a high level of trust in that woman, especially in today's day and age. And look, I agree. I agree that, and it's true of my own experience, most women will not act like a social justice warrior. In fact, when you talk to them, most of them are not that way. And you can trust most of them, just like you can trust most men. Most men, when you get down one-on-one, you talk to them on an individual, honest level, they're cool. But the prevailing culture is collectivist and collectivist thinking. And that's where it really gets you. And that's where the social justice is really a danger. It's this idea that we're all a giant group. And what matters is the group that we're in. And you can also see this with your interaction with women, right? When I started actually approaching women and I started actually asking women on date and dating in a serious way, I first discovered what I just said, that they're okay with you. They're not looking to hurt you, and they're not looking to get hurt. That's the big thing. They're really not looking to get hurt, but they're also not really looking to hurt you. As long as you treat them respectfully, things will be fine. Everything will be fine. So that's the first thing I learned. But the second thing I also learned is they just have, a lot of them have this negative view of men. Look, it's true. You're going to get rejected a shitload if you ask people out and if you put yourself out there. And I've had my more than fair share of rejections, believe me. And what I noticed is most of the time I rejected a woman, or a woman rejected me. Sorry, that's how fucking narcissistic I am, right? I was like, I rejected a woman. No, most of the time a woman rejected me. She then immediately braced for the vitriol that she expected to come from me, from the hatred and negativity she expected to come from me. And then when I didn't, she immediately softened. And I'm not saying it ever turned and she then was okay with me as far as wanting to date me, but she then became my friend or had a better opinion of me where she was like, oh, this guy's actually a decent human being. And I even asked once, I was like, did you expect me to get mad? And she's like, well, yeah. I go, why would I get mad? You're just telling me what you want. And you told me that's what you don't want. Okay. You don't want that? Fine. I'll move on with my life. Like, whatever. But again, that requires a healthy level of self-esteem. And that goes back into the whole issue of, you know, social justice comes from this lack of self-esteem, people ultimately hating themselves and blah, blah, blah. And part of the Part of the reason I've been pausing is I just found out that I have something stuck in my braces from dinner. It's really annoying me, and I'm like mildly autistic, so I'm just sort of like Emperor Gentoo something, chin strap Emperor Gentoo something, Auschwitz, I don't know. Whatever, fucking, if you watch Atypical, you know what I'm talking about. Adelaide, that's it. Emperor chin strap Adelaide Gentoo. Emperor chin strap Adelaide Gentoo. All right, I'm good now. All right, I'm not going to have a panic attack that looks like a heart attack, Michael Rappaport. Yeah, I completely lost. So social justice, it just ultimately attacks, comes from a lack of self-esteem and wants to attack your self-esteem as well. And honestly, anyone who tells you that social justice isn't something to worry about, that is the fucking biggest red flag I've ever fucking heard in my entire fucking life. Look, it's the same thing, right? If you're a dude and you're on a date with a girl and she's like, yeah, you know, I worry about my own safety around guys. You don't go, ah, there's nothing to worry about. Because look, there is. Like, you can understand, like, women tend to be physically weaker than men. So you have to understand. So if you fucking go, ah, there's nothing to worry about, that woman should fucking hightail it the fuck out of there, because that's like a warning sign. You're like telegraphing to her, like, I'm a predator, I'm gonna attack you. It's the same thing here. If someone goes, ah, social justice warriors, you don't have to worry about them, they're probably a fucking social justice warrior. They're probably a fucking social justice warrior. They've got some sort of agenda they're trying to subversively get you to accept without you realizing it. And that's ultimately, that is ultimately the biggest issue I have with social justice. Because it's collectivistic, because it comes from a person's own lack of self-esteem, which usually ultimately manifests in narcissism, it comes down to a disrespect for your own personhood, masquerading in respect for your personhood. And that is why I fucking hate social justice on a very basic level. They come at you trying to manipulate and lie to you and intimidate you into agreeing with them by treating you like they're doing it for your own best interest. And that is one of the most fucking despicable things in the entire world. And this is the irony. This is the irony. And this is why they fucking win, is what I'm about to say right now. They will go on and on about punch a Nazi, when honestly, the way to beat them, maybe just to punch them in the fucking face. Now, the reason they're going to win is, when you're rational and you're healthy, you know the way to deal with people and to deal with them respectfully is to not. It's not aggression. It's to not punch them in the face. But sometimes there's a lot of people, or it's just, and there's certain people that you just, you know, it's like, I'm really struggling with words right now, because sometimes you just want to punch someone in the fucking face. You just want to be like, shut the fuck up. There's nothing you can say. Like, dude, that Raiders guy at the bar, when he's like, hey, he's the cheater. Like, it's to the point now that if you still call Tom Brady and Bill Belichick a cheater, you probably deserve to be punched in the fucking face. Now, I won't, because it's irrational and immoral. It's wrong. So I'll do the second best thing. I'll treat you as persona non grata. But they know their opponents have goodwill and are not going to treat them as they're first of all, not going to punch them in the face, and they're not going to treat them as persona non grata. But look at their tactics. Punch a Nazi, telling us that we should shun and get rid of certain people. They're telling us how to beat them, and we won't do it. They're using our own goodness against us. So if anyone tells you they're not a social justice warrior, or they tell you that social justice warriors are not to be worried about, that's what they're doing. They're using your own goodness against you. They're using that against you. And they're telling you, they're telegraphing that they are a social justice warrior. Well, as you can hear right now, River is going off in the background, one of the podcasts there. I think that's a signal that I should probably, a sign that I should probably end this episode. What did you learn this trip? Let me know on Discord. Join that Discord. I'm going to get William to get the good link if I can get him off of Space Mountain, or the Seven Dwarfs minecart down there in Florida, or the new Pixar land, the new Toy Story land there down in Hollywood Studios, I think it's called. If I can get him off of there, I'll get him to add the new Discord link to the server there, to the website, because apparently it's not working. And you can join Discord and tell us what you learned this week. Tell me what you learned this trip. I learned that I can give a much better monologue than I thought I could. Wasn't as ranty as I thought. Maybe it was more start-stoppy. Maybe you can review it and let me know how you feel about it. It's definitely not going to be Patreon supporters. Don't worry. You're not going to be charged for this episode. This is more experimental, so you're not going to be charged for it. Don't worry about that. You will be charged the next time I have a co-host back with me. I don't think it's fair to charge you for this episode, so you're welcome. If you thought it was worth the money you would have paid, you get this for free. Thank you for your support. Plugging, I should plug a little bit. I already plugged Discord. Patreons at patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon. I stopped talking and she literally ran over here. She's like, oh, he's done talking. It's my turn. I get attention. No, I'm going to keep talking. Couple more seconds, River. Hold on. Patreon.com/TheMidSide, TheMidSide.com/Patreon. Join us on Discord, social media. You can hit me up on Twitter nowadays. I mean, you can DM me on Instagram. No one's ever done that, though. The only one who's ever done that is Iran. Remember to check her out on Instagram. Harass her a little bit. She thinks it's funny for some reason. Probably because she gets so much hatred about her name. Think that's about it. Midside.com/store if you want a classic logo t-shirt. Oh, and the most important thing is tell a friend. That is going to be the biggest way in today's day and age to get a bigger culture, a bigger group around this, and we can get more Midsiders out there because the digital space, the marketing space is so dominated by the leftist social justice conversation. It's difficult to get a word in edgewise. So please, please, please tell a friend. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce. Have a day. Where are my notes? Come on. Really? Where the fuck is the note? Oh, there's the note app. All right. Don't delete apps, boys and girls. Then you lose all your organization on your iPhone.